strap on the boots and scrape up the knuckles.
Oh, what a hit!
He got jacked.
This is the Big Red Rage. Presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Murray's gonna score! Touchdown! Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
The Rage is brought to you by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Right on the price. Right on the corner of the Santan 202 Freeway in Val Vista. SeatGeek, your ticket to great seats. And by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
The Red Sea is rising up!
Temperature rising, vision blurring, rage taking over.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I'm ready. I'm 100% ready. I'm telling you I'm ready.
And Ron Wolfley.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Unleash the fury!
Not too long ago, when the SpaceX rocket blew up, unmanned, no injuries, unmanned.
Thank you, Paul.
They didn't say at SpaceX, dang, our billion-dollar rocket blew up. SpaceX actually issued a statement, and they called it, and I quote, a rapid, unscheduled disassembly. I bring that up because the same thing goes for the NFL draft. You can be sitting in your NFL war room and you can have your plans all laid out for months and months and you think it's going one way and then kaboom! A rapid, unscheduled disassembly happens while you're on the clock.
Also known, Paulie, as a wedge bust. Just saying.
Just saying. It's one reason that the NFL draft is on four different networks this year. It's on ABC, ESPN, NFL Network, and ESPN Deportes because it is the original reality TV, and it goes down in real time, and we are here to cover it all the way up until draft night. It is the Big Red Rage. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, all presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford, soon to be joined by Cardinals cornerback coach Ryan Smith. Ron Wolfley, would you say cornerback would be an area of need slash want in this draft?
As a matter of fact, Paulie, I think there's no doubt about that. I think it's one of the biggest needs for the Arizona Cardinals. I see four really big needs, but I think they have a need for the most part in almost every area, not called quarterback for the most part, Paulie. But I do see that. I see corner being a big need right now, and it's not going to be a surprise. It's that way for many, many teams in the National Football League, going through a bit of a flex, if you will, becoming very flexible in regard to the type of corner that you have to have in today's NFL. You've got to have a guy that can play that press man cover, and you also have to have a guy that can actually play in a zone room, because that, many times, is where picks happen.
You know what? I made it number one on my big board. The big board of wants and needs, number one. You know why? Because you have one proven corner. And every team needs at least three, if not four. Now, you have Garrett Williams, who's coming off a pretty darn good rookie season.
Yeah.
But beyond Sean Murphy Bunting, Cardinals are in the market. We'll get into corner.
Speaking of one, though, Paulie, what are you going to do for one, being Kyler Murray?
Meaning?
A wide receiver, of course.
Oh, I see wide
receiver
one.
What are you going to do for one?
Well, if you're Mike Tannenbaum, and I bring this up because we're going to get into some of these mock drafts. This is my favorite slash worst mock draft of the mock draft season. If you don't recall, a month ago or so, he had the Cardinals drafting J.J. McCarthy at number four. Let there be a fourth QB. He had going to the Cardinals. They then traded Kyler Murray in a third-round pick to Minnesota for number 11 and 23. Cardinals would then draft Quinyon Mitchell at 11 and then get Ladd McConkey at number 27. So if you were to follow that, and the only reason I bring this up okay. is because he's a former NFL GM. Otherwise, I would ignore this. But if you were to follow that formula, you end up with J.J. McCarthy and Ladd McConkey instead of Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr.
So what was he doing, Paulie? We all know what he was doing. We all know what Mike Tannenbaum was doing. Look, everybody, click here, please.
Okay.
Come on.
All right, so let's ignore that. Let's go to another former NFL GM, Scott Pioli on NFL Network, and he's just sort of breaking down what this two-week stretch up to draft night looks like in a war room.
There's a lot of little detail work that needs to get done at this point in time. but the work that's being done on your front board shouldn't really exist. The top players, you should know exactly where they're at. You're just doing a little bit of cleanup work on some of those top players, and you've got the final 30 visits coming to your team. You've got private workouts that you do. Now, the other thing is this. You're thinking about strategy. There's the evaluation process of the draft, and then you have strategy. So you're spending a lot of time on the phone with your close friends in the industry that are either coaches, meaning head coaches or general managers, trying to figure out where you may be able to find value in trades.
Aha! Do you think the Cardinals are in the market for a potential trade at number four, Ron Wolfley?
Yes, I do. I think you have to plow the road for the most part, Paulie. This is where you're going to pick up the phone. You're just going to call a guy and say, hey, listen, we're not doing this today, but would you be interested? Would you be, if I gave you this kind of scenario, would you be interested in being part of that scenario? So I think you're going to plow the road a little bit at this point in time, Paulie. And I would also say right now, you're still setting your boards. That's what I think. Because there are still some interviews that are going on with these top 30 interviews. I think your board is close to being set, but I don't think it is set at this point in time. Not quite yet.
And if you track all the reports, and Craig Grealou does just that and does a spectacular job, there are nearly 30 top 30 visits that have occurred for the Cardinals. They've almost completed all of them. And if you follow all the reports, one quarter of those visits have been by receivers.
Wow.
Including the big three.
Okay.
So, all right, where does that leave the Cardinals? Will they even be there at number four to take one of the big three? Do they go down to six with the New York Giants and then still nab one of the big three? Or do they go all the way down to 11? Because would you agree that the most noise in terms of a potential trade partner is coming out of Minnesota?
No,
right?
Doubt about it, Bully.
All right, so their GM, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. There he was earlier today meeting the media. And here's what he had to say just on risk associated with moving up for a quarterback.
You know, I think just because something's risky doesn't mean you have to stay away from it. There's a, it's something that is hard to grasp, but if you grasp it, you know what the rewards are, right? And that's something you have to weigh and measure. You can't look at these decisions in a vacuum. You know, you look at the whole portfolio of decisions that go around it, the things you have to do. But just because something's risky doesn't mean, you know, you're scared from it. You're scared of it. It's uncertain, right? It's uncertain, and we got to take our swing. But that doesn't give us any pause.
Okay, Mr. Adofo-Mensah. I guess he's moving up, Paul. Is that the way you translated that right there?
You know what?
I'm just saying.
That's sort of, you know, just like SpaceX, instead of saying our rocket blew up, they called it a rapid unscheduled disassembly. That's the way the Vikings GM said, you know what? We're taking a swing.
You know, at some point in time, Paulie, don't you try to hide your true intention at some point?
He's coming up.
I'm just saying right now, there's no doubt about it. The Minnesota Vikings have targeted the top five, and they're coming. You just better get out of the way right now.
And guess what?
What's it going to take?
Guess what, Mr. Kwesi? Here's the deal. If you wait till five or you try and do a deal with the LA Chargers, well, guess what? There are four. And only four franchise quarterbacks that you can be certain of. Okay, you can wait around for Michael Penix or Bo Nix or what have you. But in this case, let there be a fourth QB. And if indeed J.J. McCarthy is that guy, and there are plenty of mock drafts that have J.J. McCarthy going number two to Washington, by the way, including Tom Pelissero, who reported at the league meeting. You know, that's real. Believe it.
Yes. And, Paulie, the best part of all of this discussion right now is the fact that the Arizona Cardinals are sitting in what I do believe is the catbird seat of this draft, being there at number four. And you know what's best about that? Monty doesn't have to do anything because we'll sit right where we are and we're going to get an impact player. Now, a lot of us, we all kind of think it's going to be a wide receiver, and we all kind of think, you know what, it could be Marvin Harrison Jr. Okay, now there's a lot of debate that is going on out there and a huge narrative surrounding that pick at number four. But to me, the good news is Monty doesn't have to do anything. You do, though. And that's why he's in a great spot.
And look, if he doesn't do something in Minnesota, there's Denver, there's the New York Giants, there's the Raiders. So there's enough suitors, enough teams desperate for a quarterback. And if next year's draft doesn't have it, the best quarterback in next year's draft is first name Jack, last name Squat, then all of a sudden, guess what? The price goes up. And there are multiple reports now that Monty Osifort is looking for three, count them, three first-round picks. Looking for the whole Trey Lance deal.
I was just going to say, why would you not start there?
Yeah. Well, think about it. Are the Vikings really going to go through all of next season with Sam Darnold, Nick Mullins, and Jaren Hall in their quarterback room?
Have a nice 2024, bro.
Denver's going to come out of the gates with Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci? Really? I mean, your season's over before it starts. So, guess what? There are teams that you can leverage against each other. There's limited supply. There's plenty of demand. And this year, unlike a year ago when you traded out and Will Anderson was a target, this is a quarterback. So there will be a quarterback surcharge or quarterback kicker. It's going to cost you. And by the way, this whole thing is building towards the Arizona Cardinals draft party, all presented by Arizona Ford Dealers. It is Thursday, April 25th on the Great Lawn. All right, been doing this for a decade plus. It is a great time. You can see players. You can hear from draft picks, coaches, cheerleaders, Big Red. For all the details, go to azcardinals.com/draft party. Up next, Cardinals cornerbacks coach Ryan Smith on the Big Red Rage, brought to you by Santan Ford in Gilbert.
It's intercepted at the 30, down the sideline to the 50-yard line. It's Murphy bunting to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, to the 10. Sean Murphy bunting is my hero. Touchdown to the pick six.
Heinicke has it deflected, and it looks like it's intercepted. Sean Murphy bunting got the hands down there.
Intercepted by the Bucs, and it's Murphy bunting down the sideline.
Line drive going down the middle, and it was intercepted on a falling down pick. Sean Murphy bunting has just picked off a pass of Aaron Rodgers.
Fumbles the ball on the far side, and it's scooped up. It's picked up by Murphy Bunting, running right to left at the 30.
Mahomes throwing all the way through an interception. And on the return, Sean Murphy Bunting.
And there's a pick right on cue. Sean Murphy Bunting.
And Moore is hit, lost the ball. The Titans have picked it up, and falling on it inside the 20 is Murphy Bunting. He ripped it out. Sean Murphy Bunting has made the play.
You might have caught the voice of Dave Passion there, voice of the Cardinals. And he figures to call the name Sean Murphy Bunting a lot more this coming season. Ron Wolfie, would you say if you're a cornerback, you need to be able to compete?
Yeah, Paulie, I would say that's a very, very good trait for a corner.
Because a few weeks ago when Sean Murphy Bunting was our guest in the Big Red Rage, about 5 feet to your left, he got up after the segment and he wanted to show us how he could do the kip-up like Buda Baker. And he literally did it right on the floor.
He did a kip-up right here in studio.
Right here, and he said he's working on it. He's only 3 weeks in. He's going to have it down by training camp, and he's going to compete with Buda in the kip-up.
You know what, Paulie? I'll do that after we talk to Coach.
No, you won't. No, but that is our segue. Ryan Smith is our guest, Cardinals cornerbacks coach. Coach, how we doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
He is that sort of guy, isn't he? Sean Murphy Bunting. In fact, when he was asked by the media about his connection with Cardinals coaches, he said, they saw something in me that I saw in myself. And someone followed up on that, and then he went into how he is a competitor. And I'm just curious, I'll just start there. The position itself, I mean, what does it require to be a top-notch corner?
I think you're hitting it right on the head. A competitor, bottom line, right? A guy who can show up, play in, play out, day in, day out, and compete at a high level. You know, and I think that's a trait that you seek out for that position. You know, along with the confidence and the resiliency, I think are some traits that stick out when I think of an elite corner.
So, Coach, also, too, one of the things I would think is to have a versatile corner as well. Maybe a guy who could actually walk up over a receiver and play some press man and actually hold up and do well with that. Also, back off and play in his own room as well and actually make some plays maybe. Maybe even interception that way. When you look at Sean Murphy Bunting, what do you see? In terms of his physical talents, how does he hold up?
I mean, Sean's got a skill set that really translates to a high-level corner in this league. You know, there's things that he can do at the line of scrimmage, his coverage, his zone instincts, his awareness, you know, things that really translate. And so we saw that in him in our evaluation during free agency, and it was across the board from the personnel side to the coaching side. We saw the traits that were there. And, you know, as a guy that can come in and really be a impact guy on this defense.
Versatility really matters to this coaching staff, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, versatility is huge. from our philosophy of being a defense that can adapt to our personnel. Mm-hmm. You know, you can put guys in different spots, put them in different situations. And a guy that like Sean, who has the capacity to learn and can play different different techniques, different coverages, and you see that on this film in Tampa Bay and in Tennessee. And then you get down to the nitty gritty and you talk to the people that's been around him the last couple years, and they all spoke so highly of him and how he was as a professional. You knew that he would come in and he would be able to integrate in this culture pretty smoothly.
Cardinals cornerbacks coach Ryan Smith, our guest here on the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert. He started as a nickel or slot corner in Tampa, really made his mark. But the last couple of years, he's played outside, and it sounds like he wanted to play outside. He wanted that challenge. Just how different? They might be listed as corners, but how different are those two spots, inside and outside?
Well, I mean, the guys on the outside, you know, are covering the outside bigger receivers. But you know what? There's a lot of the skill set translates. You know, you see him play on the inside and he's covering guys. There's still man instincts that you've got to know and you've got to be able to feel and do to be able to cover in this league. You know, because it's not like, okay, I'm going from the inside to the outside and I'm covering a lesser player. The slots in this league are just as good as the outside guys. You know, and I think with Sean's versatility, being able to play inside and show that on tape, but also as a guy that has the length to be able to challenge number one receivers X's and Z on the outside, I think that's where his is really going to be able to fit his skill set.
His backstory is amazing. He was a three-sport athlete in high school, and because he didn't do a lot of the football camps and stuff, he was considered a zero-star recruit. And then went to Central Michigan. By the time he's done with college ball, he's a round two draft pick. I mean, miraculous, right? The rise and his game. And once again, we come back to the competitor in him and what coaches saw in him. Here's Sean Murphy Bunting.
They see a dog, pretty much, plain and simple. They see a guy that can go out there and shut people down. And that's just what I see in myself, and that's what I do. And so we believe in the same philosophies. They want me to mix up some things I know how. They want me to do certain techniques that I know how to play. I know how to play pretty much everything. I played in many different systems. Lead by example, lead the younger guys that they have in the room, show them that everything is possible, but at the same time have an experience behind it as proof that everything that I'm saying is it's happened.
You know, in offense, JG says, no block, no rock. If you're a receiver, you better block. If you're a corner, you better tackle in this defense. Right, Coach?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you can't – in the NFL, you can't hide. Mm. Right, so you've got to be able to, as a corner, you've got to be able to come up in the run game, set edges, keep the cup, as we call it, keep the ball on my inside pad. And when I'm asked to tackle, I've got to show up. All right, because if you can't, offenses are good enough, the ball's going to find you. Right, so to answer your question, absolutely.
So, you know, Coach, for me right now, being a former player, I'm fascinated with how things work in the NFL, right? Because there's always that curtain as a player, not as a coach, but as a player, there's always that curtain that's hanging in front of you. How does it work? How do these guys actually do it right here? So when they determined that they wanted to know a little bit more about Sean Murphy Bunting, did they come to you and ask you specifically, we want you to break this guy down and help us out in regard. Tell us what you think of this guy. Did they do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's what I love about this organization is we're all on the same page. So they asked for my opinion. They asked for the opinion of Pat Toney, our secondary coach, Nick Rawlis, JG. All of us had a hand in this decision that Monty took our input and made the move because we were all on board. And we had a plan and we saw a guy that really fit what we wanted to do on defense.
Coach, would you watch this together? Would you all watch it together you were breaking it down? Or was it just you?
Well, not initially. So we all wanted to formulate our own opinion.
Okay.
Right? And I think what I love about how this staff does it is we're not a staff that's just going to sit in the room, throw a guy up. One guy has an opinion, and then everybody's a subject to groupthink saying, yeah, let's go get that done. Right? So we all worked independently, came back together in a meeting room, and we shared our opinions and our thoughts.
Cool.
And we there was a consensus around the room, you know. So that really raises our excitement of, you know, we can't wait till OTAs kicks off, the guys get in, we can start working with these guys and just see the excitement of the guys that we have, especially the new guys that are on board.
Cardinals corners coach Ryan Smith is our guest on the Big Red Rage presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert. All right, let's learn a little bit more about you. You played college ball at William & Mary. Last Cardinals affiliation, I remember, was Mike Leach, Cardinals long snapper for a good decade. Great dude. Went to William & Mary. And then you played for a college football coaching legend, didn't you? Detail that
Absolutely.
For us.
Absolutely. So Jimmy Laycock was my head coach. If you've played at William & Mary, you've probably been coached by Jimmy Laycock. He was the head coach there for 39 years. I think he won 249 games. But
Some of the names include Mike Tomlin and Sean McDermott.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's been a lot of coaches that have come through there. Dan Quinn was on one of his coaching staffs. Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, was a player for him as well. So, you know, there's been a lot of guys that have come through that program. There's a lot of pride that goes with that. And I'm proud to be a Tribe alum.
You know what's amazing about that? When I think of Mike Tomlin and I think of Sean McDermott, I think of leaders of men. That's what I think. Was Coach like this?
Yeah, he was. He built a program. He built a standard, and everybody that walked in the building knew the standard. You know, and I grew so much in my time there. I arrived on campus as a school start walk-on. So, you know, I had to try out when I got there, and I learned the hard way. Nothing was really given to me. You know, when my first day of practice, they ran out of practice jerseys, so I had one of the ones in the back that didn't have a number on it, so I'm running out there without a number. You know, so I come from humble beginnings from a collegiate athlete perspective, and then I was able to work my way up and eventually be a scholarship guy and a starter.
Wow.
You know, so it was a cool journey, and through the whole way, I really looked at Jimmy Laycock as a leader and a guy that I could follow and emulate. And, you know, there's many reasons why I got into coaching, but he was one of them, just seeing how he ran that program and the impact that he had on a lot of guys.
In high school, you went to the Blue Ridge School in St. George, Virginia. I would not use the word humble for that one. I would use prestigious based on what
Absolutely.
I saw online. That what sort of experience was that?
Well, you know, I went there for my last 3 years of high school, got in there as a sophomore. I grew up with a single mother. It was just me and her. And, you know, we made this decision. We thought it was the best thing for my future to go to this school that was good academics and good athletics. And it's tucked away in the mountains of the western part of Virginia. And, it's definitely a different experience, you know, living on your own as a 14, 15-year-old and being in a dorm, not riding a bus to school like I was used to. But it really taught me lessons, and really prepared me for college. When I got to college as a freshman, my mother just dropped me off and left. Like, she didn't stay for any orientation or anything like that because I'd been out the house the last couple of years. So I was, you know, it kind of set me up and prepared me for walking on at William & Mary. And, you know, I was in the right headspace at that time. I had matured enough to be able to understand that, all right, this isn't given to me. This is another challenge that I just have to overcome.
And, Coach, what position did you play?
I played wide receiver and I played cornerback.
Okay, wide receiver and cornerback. So two sides of one coin, obviously.
Yeah, in high school.
When I went
to college, I played cornerback.
Okay, you played corner in college.
And I couldn't cover like Sean Murphy.
So you could run.
Well, right? You know, they tried to roll the safety over top of me because I wasn't as fast as they would have liked me to be.
Were you playing a lot of cover two?
We were playing a whole lot of cover two to help me out. So I was definitely on the cloud side, right? But but what I did, because I had to ride that pine for a
you
couple
years. You also had to be able to tackle, though, if you were
I
playing
did.
Cloud.
I could. I wasn't going to turn that down.
A little corner force.
Yeah, I had that mentality. I had a mentality about my game, you know. But it was, for me, it was I had to sit and watch the first couple years, first 3 to 4 years. And I was on scout team for a couple of years. So I really learned the technique part of it because I could not have a misstep. If I stepped the wrong way, I was done. There was no recovery speed.
That helps you now, though, as a coach.
Absolutely, absolutely. That prepared me and especially wanted me to, like, in my mind, I was like, when I graduated from William Mary, I felt like I could coach corners at a high level, just because the technique and the study that I had to do just to be able to touch the field, you know, was something that was able to grow my game from a knowledge perspective that set me up to be a good coach.
Well, you had three rookie corners last year get a lot of time. So, you know, I mean, it's to their benefit. They have a technician as a coach. Give us a quick rapid-fire thumbnail on Garrett Williams and what you saw last year and what he's poised to do this year.
Oh, Garrett is a pro's pro. And that was evident through the draft process last year. That was evident him showing up as a rookie. His mentality, his mindset, his determination, you know, he's going to be successful in whatever he does. Right. So for him, like, to speak on Garrett, I'm so excited for the future. He's put in so much work, you know, and then coming off the injury that he had in college, getting incorporated into the NFL game midseason there, and then having a full offseason of being in good health is, you know, I think the sky's the limit for Garrett Williams.
And give us a quick scouting report on Keytrell Clark, especially since you recruited him three different times in college at three different universities.
Oh, yeah.
And you finally ended up together in the NFL.
Oh, yeah, you didn't know that story.
I did not know that story. Yeah. You've got to be kidding. Yeah. Three different times?
Yeah, I was at Elon University recruiting Keytrell, and he told me no.
And then?
Then we move on to James Madison. So my head coach I was working for got the job at JMU, going to JMU. It was the same recruiting cycle. So I tried to get him at the end of the recruiting cycle. I was actually in his living room. And he ends up committing to Liberty during that process.
So he told you no?
He told us no.
Okay, so then, I see a trend.
Then the next time I was at Virginia Tech, when he transferred from Liberty, after he balled out as a freshman. I had just got to Virginia Tech, and I was fighting tooth and nail for Keytrell, and he says he's going to Louisville. So I was 0-3, and then when he came out here on his 30 visit, it was like, almost felt like fate. And then we drafted him, and we me and Keytrell, we talk all the time, like, man, this is it's crazy how things shook out. It was almost like it was meant to be.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So me and Keytrell go back pretty far.
He began last year as a starter, and then his playing time declined. If there's one takeaway, one area of his game where he can get better going into year two, what would it be?
Well, I think, shoot, he's a guy that has worked on every part of his game that he thought that or that, and we've talked about that he can improve on, like coming in, getting thrown in the fire as a rookie. You know, he's faced a lot of adversity. And, you know, as we talked about at the beginning of this show, is resiliency is one of the critical factors of being a high-level corner. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a guy who's a rookie that's, you know, that started last year. You know, beat those odds, beat guys out in camp, and started the year as a starter. You know, and to be able to endure what he endured, yeah. Right? Not playing towards the end of the year. This guy's, man, he's in a headset or a headspace and a mindset that he's hungry. And, you know, I'm proud of him of his maturity level and how he handled everything. And I'm excited to see how he's going to respond and how he shows up for OTAs.
How do you coach a guy when you know that he's got to be confident and resilient, and you know that confidence is going to help him be resilient, yet at the same time, you got to tell him the truth?
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to tell them the hard truth, right, in the NFL. And what I've learned is be upfront and honest with guys. But the thing that helps us out, especially with a guy like Keytrell, and even Star, even Devon Wilson, Newt, like, we have those conversations. We're not running from those conversations. We're willing to address the problem, face it head on, and then continue to grow our relationship as we continue to grow that side of their game.
Coach, thank you.
Coach, man. We enjoyed
thank
it.
You. Really appreciate
Wolf,
it.
Wolf, his mom, by the way, served as a senior chief in the U.S. Navy. You could have used some of that discipline as a young man growing up.
Indeed.
Thank you, Coach. Ryan Smith joined us here on the Big Red Rage. We continue, all presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Hand off up the middle. B.J. Ojulari is there to grab Rodriguez at the line of scrimmage. Snap to Jackson, he's gonna throw from the pocket. Looking in trouble, wrapped up and thrown down for a sack. B.J. Ojulari gets his first sack. The rookie out of LSU gets a big sack here on Lamar Jackson.
Closed on Lamar Jackson quickly and got the sack. That is big time by B.J.
Heineke play fake, in trouble, hits, and sacked by B.J. Ojulari back at the 10-yard line. A loss of about 10.
Oh, that is a big sack.
Back to pass goes Heinicke with time. Now the pocket collapses, and Heinicke sacked back at the 9-yard line. B.J. Ojulari having a breakout game with his second sack, forcing a punt.
Oh, the rookie once again would not be denied.
That following week in the back right corner of the Cardinals locker room, the guys are calling him two-sack Laurie, B.J. Ojulari, two-sack Laurie. And if there is one guy who could take that big step in year two, my vote would be for B.J. Ojulari, because the Cardinals, as a defense, need to get to the quarterback. They need that pass rusher the other team has to account for. Where are you going to get that guy? Well, these days, try and trade for that guy. It'll cost you almost as much as a quarterback. And then try and find that guy in free agency. They don't exist. And if they do end up in free agency, they get ridiculous money. The latest this week is Josh Allen to Jacksonville. 5 years, $150 million. $88 million guaranteed. So here on the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert, Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, and special thanks again to Cardinals cornerbacks coach Ryan Smith. Wolf, to what degree is getting an edge rusher a priority in this year's draft?
Well, it is critical, Paul. I think there's no doubt about that. We're talking about wide receiver. We're talking about corner. We're talking about edge. And we're talking about interior offensive linemen, as far as I'm concerned. Those are the top four needs for the Arizona Cardinals right there. And when you talk about edge, first of all, I just want to say B.J. Ojulari, I expect B.J. to get significantly better this year. He's that type of player, Paul. This is who he is. He's got a great football IQ, first of all. He loves the game, and he's really, really smart. To me, you're going to take your lumps as a rookie. You're going to go ahead and do that. And I think BJ took his lumps as a rookie, had a hard start, as a matter of fact, getting out of the practice field to actually start. So that really set him back as well. I think he's going to be a bit of a late bloomer on this. So I think we're going to see him really grow in year number two. I'm expecting that. He can set the edge, and he can get the edge.
He had four sacks total in limited playing time. Some of that due to injury. Got a late start on the year. Got a late start during the regular season. Even so, his position coach, Rob Rodriguez, saw enough to be happy with the progress.
That kid has had to work so hard. And people don't realize that's why rookies who come into this league don't just jump in here and start rushing the passer. Because they need to learn how to rush with the proper angles. You can't just run around people in this league. You're not going to play a Division I-AA team every 4 weeks and get a couple sacks. That's not how it works. You have to fight. You're playing against the best every week. That kid has had to get healthy. He's had to mature in this league, and he's had to learn those things. And it is a trial by fire. It's an uncomfortability for such a long period of time. Some guys can start to doubt themselves. This guy's had such a great head on his shoulders, and he's just worked his butt off.
I know Kyle VandenBosch on the Red Sea Report has said repeatedly, really likes what he saw in film, what he saw on the field from B.J. Ojulari.
That matters.
A year ago. And look, Cardinals have to get better in that department. Not only did they have one sack in the final six games, which we keep citing, right? But if it's about affecting the quarterback, as Jonathan Gannon says, not always, it doesn't always come down to just the sack numbers. Realize that the Cardinals, as a defense, allowed the second highest passer rating in the NFL last year, and they allowed the second highest completion percentage to opposing quarterbacks. So I'm guessing a lot of that is tied into how much time those quarterbacks had to throw.
Yeah, Paulie, you're right about that, no doubt. But I also would say let's go to rundown situation as well. First and 10, second and 1-6. The Arizona Cardinals were the last team in the league in terms of stopping the run.
Wow.
And you know that. Yeah. So again, many times these offenses were in a very good situation to go ahead and convert on third down in a lot of these situations. It all starts with being able to stop the run. That's one of the reasons why your edge guy has got to be capable of setting that edge, being very, very physical on that edge, and also being a guy that can get off blocks and make a play as well, because it all starts there. And that's one of the reasons why I'm encouraged with B.J. Ojulari.
All right, so let me ask you this then. B.J. Ojulari, Zaven Collins, who figures to be in a contract year, Dennis Gardeck. I mean, you have dudes, highly drafted dudes in the first two at the position. If you're sitting there either at 27 or because of a trade, you end up in the middle of the first round, are you going after a Byron Murphy II, a game-wrecking defensive tackle, before you go for the edge? Because it starts from the inside out.
You know where I'm going on that one. I mean, I'm just, Paulie, honestly, right now, I do believe edge is a huge area of need. But if you tell me Byron Murphy is sitting there, we're talking about a three technique, a guy that is the most difficult thing to stop in the football universe is a destructive three technique. That's all I'm saying right now. If he were there in that situation, I would have to say, okay, even though I don't think it's this massive area of need for the Arizona Cardinals after free agency and what they did in free agency, if Byron Murphy was there in the middle of the round and you were going to draft him, I'd say, oh, okay, hey, we got a wrecking ball. And you know the way I feel about that, because those three techniques, they impact not only the running game big time with the blocking schemes and rundown situation, but also that interior push that has become so important in today's NFL, to be able to get in the face of a quarterback and do it in the interior, in that interior pocket.
Because this draft does not have an edge rusher, by most estimates, worthy of number four overall. There's no Myles Garrett. There's no Nick Bosa. Right, the guys that are considered the top edge rushers in this draft at best are going 10th, 11th, or 12th. Whether it's Dallas Turner, you know, Leatu Latu, whether it's Chop Robinson, Jared Verse, these are all guys who are projected to go in the middle of the first round at best for the most part.
You know, it's also interesting too, Paulie. I saw a lot of mock drafts that had Chop Robinson right around 23. I'm just saying, you know what? Hey, listen, I'm not trying to tip off Monty in any way, shape, or form in regard to pulling off some type of trade. I'm just saying, at 23, interesting.
Yeah. What's interesting is that Cardinals don't currently own 23. That's the Vikings pick.
I'm making
the
assumption, Paul.
So you're already
making the assumption. That's exactly
Cardinals
right.
Cardinals are trading out of four and doing a package with the Vikings to get 11 and 23 and 27.
Paulie, is that karma? Is that an omen, Paul? What would you call that harbinger?
Think about that. If you're at 11 and you go, oh, I don't know, you go with a top corner in the draft, Terrion Arnold or a Quinion Mitchell. And then at 23, you go with a Byron Murphy II and or a Chop Robinson. And then at 27, you probably won't get Byron Murphy II, but maybe you get a Braden Fisk out of Florida State. You get,
maybe there's a Graham Barton there at number 27.
I'm talking about defensive front here.
Oh, okay, Paulie. Okay. I'm just talking about the first round.
See, to me, you could go the whole first round and get three defensive building blocks, corner, D-line, and edge.
Yeah, you're right, Paulie.
And then wait to get receiver at 35. I think that's where we differ.
Yeah, we do differ there, Paulie. That's great. You could go ahead and, you're going to build the defense on all three levels, Paul.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah. I'm going to get Kyler, somebody to throw the ball to.
How effective was Justin Jefferson last year after the quarterback went down? Okay, receivers don't make the quarterback. Quarterbacks make the receivers.
Man, when you're a young guy, though, you need that so badly. You need a guy who knows what he's doing, who can get open, because that allows you to go through your read and get the ball out quicker, right?
Do you know how deep this draft is in tackles and receivers? Do I have to break out the list of the All-Pro and Pro Bowl receivers who were not drafted in the first round? I'm just saying there is so much talent beyond the big three at the receiver position. I'm willing to wait because you have so many other pressing needs in so many different spots. And guess what? The supply isn't nearly what it is a receiver. The supply is much, much less at some of these other spots.
Yeah, in the 1985 draft, there was a fullback. His name was Ricky Moore from Alabama.
Okay.
And then the next fullback taken was Ron Wolfley from West Virginia. Paul, there was a massive difference between those guys. You go ahead. You've got to sometimes just eat it and draft the better guy.
All right, learn more about the Cardinals season tickets, premium seating, group tickets, and the all-new luxury field seating experiences today. All right, you just go to azcardinals.com/tickets. I mean, if Wolf's willing to throw himself under the bus to make his point, how do I argue with that? Once again, azcardinals.com/tickets. In fact, we'll get a draft memory from Wolf when we come back on the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Chaw!
As the draft was coming up, I had my family come down. We were having some fun parties and living it up, because this was a moment that, you know, you don't get to experience but once in your life. And we had a tea time, me and my brothers and my dad, that morning. And everybody was like, you're gonna miss the draft. They're gonna call your name. You're gonna be on the golf course. I said, don't worry, I'm not going in the first round. I knew that I wasn't gonna be a first round pick. We went and played golf. I was extremely tired from partying. two, three nights prior. So I went to a back room at the hotel we were at. There's still five picks in the first round. I'm gonna go lay down. I'm gonna catch a little sleep. And so I was asleep when I got drafted.
Jake Plummer, known for being ultra cool, calm, clutch, he wasn't even awake when his name was called 42nd overall, the Arizona Cardinals' second round pick. Unknown to Jake until his agent came in.
Dave Dunn came and tapped me on the shoulder and woke me up, and I came to. He said, "Hey man, you're an Arizona Cardinal." I said, "Oh, wow, okay."
And now you understand why Jake was so clutch in the clutch in the fourth quarter, because he was so cool. Nothing rattled him.
Chill.
Just, bruh. And I tell you, that is Jake Plummer, unfiltered, unplugged. And if you go search wherever your favorite podcast, go search Cardinals Folktales Drafting Jake. And it's the story of his pick in the second round of the 1997 draft. And by the end of his second season, guess what? The Cardinals had their first playoff win in nearly half a century. Great story. Cardinals would add Pat Tillman, his teammate at ASU, in the very next draft. And the rest is history, as they say. We're wrapping up this edition of the Arizona Cardinals' Big Red Rage. Special thanks again to the cornerbacks coach, Ryan Smith, for joining us earlier. Right, he had a bunch of rookies in his room a year ago. Wolf, what's your draft? I don't know if I ever heard this. Where were you when your name was called in the fourth round, 1985?
Yeah, Paulie. You know what? I was in West Virginia, West by God, Virginia, of course, getting ready to actually move back. Had a U-Haul. I was packing up on draft day. And I watched the first couple of rounds, and my agent told me, "Man, you could go as high as round three." And I laughed at him. You're just so full of it. And I also thought, I could go as late as round seven or eight, somewhere in there. Then Bill Parcells called me. He called me before the draft started, Parcells. And he said, "Ron, I just want you to know right now, if you don't get drafted today, we'd love to have you." That's what he said. Bill Parcells. Paul, that's a totally true story right there. Of course, what happened was Larry Wilson of the then St. Louis Cardinals picked up the phone and called me and said, "Ron, this is Larry Wilson, and we're getting ready to draft you here in the fourth round, 104th overall." And I said, "This isn't Larry." I did.
No,
I kid
come
you
on.
Not. I thought it was one of my boys, one of my buddies, actually playing a prank on me. I said, "This isn't Larry." He said, "No, Ron, this is Larry Wilson of the St. Louis Cardinals." You know,
by the way, kids, they didn't have caller ID in 1985.
That's right, Paul.
So it was common for kids in college to bust on each other with these pranks.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
And that's the way that went. But the best one, I have to tell you, and I hope I have time for this, is when Craig was drafted by the four-time Super Bowl champion, Pittsburgh. Steelers.
Hello.
We had the whole family at 45 Hodson Road in Orchard Park, New York. There they all were, Paulie. And all of a sudden, the phone rings. Craig had walked out because he thought he was going to go in the third round. And we were literally there in the sixth round, right? And it was going on. And it was the fifth round. And he was nervous and he walked out of there. And suddenly the phone rang. My sister Joy May answers the phone. And she's saying, "Okay, yes, all right, what? Okay. Who is this? Okay." And all of a sudden, she's giving us the thumbs down like this. Come to find out, she hangs up the phone, and we're like, "What? Who was it?" She said, "It was the Steelers. They drafted him in the fifth round." We were like, "Why are you giving us the thumbs down on this on the phone call?" She said, "It wasn't the Bills."
Oh,
that's what she said, Paul. And here it was, the four-time Super Bowl champion Pittsburgh Steelers who had just drafted Craig in the fifth round. Oh my goodness, he had gone for a walk in a gravel pit in our backyard. We drove down that gravel pit and Craig, you got drafted. He just fell to the ground. It was really incredible.
Meanwhile, your sister hung up on Chuck Knoll.
Chuck Knoll, basically, just was giving it a thumb down. You know, man, they stink. Yeah. It's the Steelers.
You know, the hometown Bills didn't take them. Then, you know, okay, it's that's good
but
stuff.
But that's the way that it goes, man. It really is. It's one of those days you're not going to soon forget.
And look, the last 2 years, the Cardinals have executed trades in round one. Hollywood Brown 2 years ago. Then, of course, last year, trading down from 3 to 12, coming back up to 6. It's amazing how many of these mock drafts have Monty Hassenfort doing the exact same thing. Trading out of 4 and then coming back up to get one of the big three receivers around 6 or 7.
I would also say it's very interesting to see the way this has been a paradigm shift here. Because when the mock drafts were first coming out, it's a no-brainer. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Arizona Cardinals at number 4. Now, all of a sudden, everybody is on that bandwagon.
Well, 3 first-round picks. Do you pull the trigger? If you're Monty and you get 3 first-round picks, do you trade out?
Sold.
There you go. And you know what? It's all going to go down. 2 Thursday nights from now, the Arizona Cardinals draft party presented by Arizona Ford Dealers, the Great Lawn State Farm Stadium, for all the info. And it's a great, I mean, they put the party into draft party. Go to azcardinals.com/draft party. Special thanks, as always, Jim Omohundro, Cody Fincher, Matt Lazarus, for Ron Wolfley, on Paul Calvisi. This has been the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert.
Chaw!
You've been listening to the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert. Right on the price, right on the corner of the Santan 202 Freeway in Val Vista. The Rage is brought to you by SeatGeek, your ticket to great seats, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast. This has been an exclusive presentation of the Arizona Cardinals Football Club.